Fire Casino Retreat. Part 1.
So this is day 13, the last day of the Tower of Halbar retreat, and end of retreat summary. With me, Daniel Ingram.
And me, Duncan Barford.
And Florian Whips.
And we're sitting here today to describe something about what we did, what happened, and our best advice should anybody want to do a similar thing to what we did. So I was just going to start off. We rented the Tower of Halbar, or the Torriabar, as apparently the locals say it's called, in incomprehensible Scottish. And it's a beautiful tower built in the 1500s, with still a lot of the 1500s amenities, including particularly the stairs and the cold and damp. But a lot of other wonderful features that make it a truly glorious place to do a retreat.
The indentations in the stone from generations of people smashing their head against the ceiling.
And the dried blood. Flesh. But, it has made us mindful of the steps. And so we rented the Torriabar for 2 weeks, and February 1st through 15th of 2015, with the intention to do a powers and casino-based retreat based on candle flame meditation, different from a typical Vipassana retreat, and that our goal was explicitly to attain to peaceful, rapturous, and unusual states of consciousness, and have weird-ass experiences. I mean, unusual experiences. And to attempt to cultivate powers things, to have visions, to have strange dreams, to travel, to draw pentagrams in the air, and have other fun like that. So very different from a Vipassana retreat. Somebody wanted to chime in with some more schedule, what we did.
Yeah, it turns out we also did a lot of very nice cooking.
Yes. We ate well.
Very good food.
So this was not a retreat like any other I'd been on before. I mean, we socialised, didn't we? Mm-hmm. We talked a lot. Mm-hmm. And the discussion, for me at least, played a big part in the experiences that I had. And I think one of the things I'd start off by saying is how different the practice was from what I'd read about in the texts. It turned out to be something quite different from the assumptions that I got from reading the texts of how you do a casino practice.
The text being Visuddhimagga, or
other texts? And Vimuttimagga as well. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised by how universal the experiences were that we were having. Mm. I mean, we've been able to draw pictures, haven't we, of the stuff that we're seeing.
So I'm going to back up just a little bit to simple logistics before we delve into experiences. So our basic setup was we all sat in the living room, and we sat from 7 to 8, and then somebody made breakfast, and then from approximately, though it varied by the day, 9-ish until 1, we had a practice period of 4 hours where we would do a mix of sitting, walking, reclining, and whatever else we thought was best for us, with the goal being to optimize our concentration, right? So we were optimizing for comfort, for physical well-being, for concentration, for mental alertness, to match our postures and the timing of what we did to what felt best to us for whatever we were going through at that time. So it left a lot of that in our specific control based on our intuition and our best guess about what would be useful, which is also different from a typical retreat, which would tend to have more structured, scheduled sits. Mm-hmm. But us all being experienced, dedicated practitioners, I think that worked
pretty well.
So then we had lunch, which was quite fine. Again, the cooking level on this retreat was just fantastic. And then we had another practice period from 2 to 7, so 5 hours-ish, approximately 2 to 7, same format. And then dinner from 7 to 8, 8:30-ish, and then from 8:30 till We set out to go to one, but usually made it to midnight and then did some magical practice and talked about the day.
Yeah.
So with taking time during our lunch, our meal periods, and at the end of the day to debrief, discuss things, talk about whatever, tell jokes, laugh. Mm.
Wear robes, wave wands.
Wear robes, wave wands, yes. Do a few rituals, banishings, play with drawn pentagrams in the air, and stuff like that. So that's the basic format of what we did for really 12 and a half days, really, in terms of what we actually did with arrival and setup. And now,
so how many hours of practice? Day. At least 12 hours a day, wasn't it?
Yeah, so yeah, definitely at least 12 hours, if closer to 13, sometimes 14, 15. In the beginning, we were a little more diligent. Mm. And so over 12 and a half days, you know, at least 150 hours of practice. And the conversation still is a degree of, is some kind of practice, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so, and then sometimes practice would continue, even like when we would lie down to go to sleep or wake up in the middle of the night, like, you know, couldn't help but seeing the colors, the shapes, the stuff. So anyway, so that's the logistics. And then there's what happened. So.
I mean, I'd just say as well that I was coming into this without having a concentration practice at all. I started some work with the casino just to try and get up to speed for a couple of weeks before doing half-hour sits here and there. So I was quite surprised to be having quite intense experiences, like, you know, one day in, basically.
I had done similar practice a few years earlier over the course of 8 months. One half hour daily practice with a candle. And the experiences were similar, but of course with over 10 hours a day practice, they were more intense and more interesting. And with other people doing the same practice, they were incredibly more, well, interesting, because we could talk about it and point things out to each other.
Yeah.
So again, the conversations were such a big part of the entire setup.
Yeah, and also having three practitioners who have good insight background, really diverse practice background, a magical background, and open minds and good attitudes was basically critical to having this be the fine experience that it was. You know.
Now, at some point soon, someone's going to have to describe the casino practice.
Yeah, so the casino practice. So, anybody?
Go for it, Daniel.
All right, so we stare at a flame. So it's three people sitting around in a living room, two people on couches propped up with pillows in relatively comfortable style, though occasionally we'd move to the floor, and Florian on the easy, no, on the chair with some of the cushions removed to make it a little more supportive and firmer. And a nice fire going, and a heater, and the combination of the heater and the fire making wonderful church music, eventually, began hearing, all three of us, pretty interesting. And we would have a fine German 1 1/4 inch, or 3.2 centimeter, 15 hour plus burning high-quality candle in the middle of the room. Very important to have quality candles, we realized, because otherwise the flame moves and stuff and wax goes all over the place. But with quality candles, like Duncan had the good sense and taste to buy, we did quite well. And so we would stare at the candle flame in a comfortable posture until we felt a bit of a retinal burn, close our eyes, and then we would start with the red dot. Anybody want to take it from there?
Yeah, let's add that we also, all of us, I think, used a mantra just to steady the discursive mind.
Various mantras along
various
the way.
Mantras, various chants synchronizing with the heater and things like that. So the red dot. So after the after image appears on the closed eyelids, after a few seconds, get this bright dot.
We all would get this. That's the interesting thing about it.
Yeah, so that seems to be a very universal thing. which would turn red, and then develop additional features such as the kind of halo of pale greenish to gold, or golden lines or threads in the middle of the red dot, or additional little red and golden dots orbiting the whole setup.
Mm-hmm.
The shape of the dot would sometimes be circular, depending on the shape of the candle flame initially, more teardrop shaped, or whichever shape one associates with that.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
with the outside sometimes spinning back and forth like a gear, mm-hmm. with little spikes or mm-hmm. points on it, the outside greenish part, and then the inside golden parts spinning various speeds, sometimes mm-hmm. very fast, slow, back and forth related to the phase of the breath,
mm-hmm.
sometimes for me becoming like calligraphy, sometimes becoming an actual five-pointed star mm-hmm. of high degree of definition.
Mm-hmm.
And for me it would start out sort of that oval shape, and then it would for me regularize to something much rounder as it began to shift and then fade in a much sort of greener yellow, like the green yellow would sort of take over, at least for me, and it would become much more round and sort of spin off to the sides and spin to the middle, and I could figure out as my attention got better how to keep it in the center, and then it would fade more and more and flicker and eventually fade out, occasionally to reappear later on, and then fade out again and become the black dot or the dark purple
mm-hmm.
space around it. Or
I think it's important to point out at this stage that what we're talking about here isn't just incidental detail that we may have noticed, but it is actually the practice.
Yeah.
Being mm-hmm. able to see these things mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. the practice.
And focusing on them.
Yeah. Seeing these things is leading you through particular yeah. states of consciousness.
Right. And then the thing became the sequence. Like, what's everybody's sequence? And we debrief over each meal. What's your sequence? What are you going through? You see the red dot, then you see the what, then you see the what, then you see the what.
Yeah.
And then how did you get from the this to the that? Because we were all going through very similar sequences and trying to figure out.
Yes, and it was amazing to see how closely the experiences would match and how.
Yes.
In how synchronized the experiences were. Like
reproducible.
Mm. Reproducible, and also. Okay, sometimes you were maybe half a day ahead.
Right.
But, I mean...
Yeah. Well, I'd also done this before.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are descriptions in the text. The Shulimagga.
Yeah, but very terse. Like.
Very terse, yeah. And, I mean, we've all come away with the impression after doing this retreat that we need to rewrite those texts.
Yes. Yeah.
So...
We will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that it's easier to...
recognize
mm-hmm. yeah, what's being talked about. I mean, you said, Florian, that you could see that some of them have been mistranslated.
Yeah, something got maybe lost in translation, because the Visuddhimagga translation I had access to said the red dot would appear above the after image, when in my experience it appears really on top of it, like
embedded
in it, over it. So this word over somehow got... had a hard time in translation.
Probably.
Yeah, and there's all this stuff about sign and countersign, isn't there?
Yeah, which is really annoying.
Yeah.
And everybody's definition of what's access concentration and the sign and the countersign varies, and people, genre heads, get into all sorts of wars about these things.
And they get really angry.
So I think we should totally friggin' not use those terms and just describe the things.
Yeah.
And call them our own phases, or call them, you know, because we started calling them phases, phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four, like these various levels and layers that we would get to. So out past the red dot is where things got interesting. And here it's interesting that the three of us each had our preferential color. We all got so we could do a lot of different colors, but Duncan's was a iridescent blue.
Mm.
And Florian's was a light green,
mm-hmm.
and mine was a deep violet, purple to a medium purple, with blue as my secondary. And you said purple was your secondary, sort
yes,
of,
yeah.
right? And you,
I had blue too.
Blue, mm-hmm. yeah. So we each had somewhat different color preferences for what made up the majority of what happened next. And what happened next is complicated. And so that's the problem. So up past the red dot, explaining what happened is complicated. And so I would start to notice, well, first of all, we would all notice sort of a spacing out. So initially we'd get the red dot, and the red dot would sort of disappear, and then it's sort of hard to know what to do.
Yeah.
Right, because there's this sort of vague field with no red dot, because the red dot's really easy. Yeah. Right, there's a red dot, it's like, you know, it's like a laser sight on your target.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't help but, and then...
I just wanted to say at this point that I was stuck there for several days.
Yeah.
Because the red dot is a very intense experience. You stare at it and it goes bananas.
Yeah,
it's like a burning LED laser sign. Mm-hmm. And,
bananas if you're American.
Yeah. And eventually it turns black, it disappears.
And then what?
And then there's a gulf. And for ages I was like, right. I was still at that intensity that I had with the red dot.
Right. Yeah, which is very focused and very narrow and very bright and very clear.
And very wrong.
Well, but it's useful for the early stages, right? It just only takes you so far.
Well, it's the first stage.
Right, it's the first stage. And so then the tricky thing about this practice for anybody who's doing this, those following along at home, attempting to replicate our experiments, is what to do with what happens next. So when so each of us was a little different, but I would tend to have the red dot start to get this purple around it, this sort of discombobulated purple, and then it would become a really round purple sometimes, and then that would sort of become like a hole of blackness or darkness or vagueness or dark, really dark gray.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question is what to do with what happens next. Well, the thing with what to do with what happens next is to look for fine detail, and we debated some of these points, but there's usually a spacing out period, and then fine detail. Like fine lines, fine shifting shapes, fine purples that are wider. And so what was previously the center of attention was interesting, now the periphery becomes more interesting.
Yeah.
And you start getting more of your preferred color out around where the dot was. To start to fill in the periphery and start to widen out somewhat. And then the detail becomes a little bit out from the center is where the fine detail becomes. Anybody want to jump in here at this point?
Yeah, let's also mention how the other things in the visual field look. I mean, the red dot is there.
Oh, right,
the background is not quite black, but darkish.
Mm-hmm.
There's these lighter spots floating on top, sometimes bigger, sometimes like TV static, different
mm-hmm.
colors. So it's not a uniform background.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so when the red dot disappeared... this TV static snow thing would intensify.
Mm-hmm.
And at first it would be very blurry, and then, like you said, develop these fine features, lines or sharper edges or smaller flakes of colored light.
Subtle organized iridescences.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like fine hairs or shimmers or... Yeah, like TV pixels and lines.
And I'd describe the attitude of mind that's needed at this point as sort of sinking, sort of letting go, loosening, sinking. If you hold on...
When you say sinking, you mean like synchronizing rather than sinking down? Or
sinking down.
Sinking down. Okay, yeah. Right, both. You need both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
both sense of the word.
If you were to keep up the intensity that you had on the red dot, I would find that the colours would...
It's not going to do something.
Yeah, it tightens up, they vanish.
Right.
You need to do this sinking. And sometimes, for me, it felt as if I wasn't doing anything. It felt as if I wasn't concentrating. Sometimes it would feel as if I was falling asleep. But that sinking down, for me, was necessary.
Because the red dot corresponds to the arising and passing away. It's a fine, centred object with high resolution and speed and detail. And then that... When it's gone, like that's dissolution, everything's falling away, there's a hole, there's a void, like you can't find anything, it's spacey. So that's like the dissolution correlation with the early part of the third jhana as you're coming into that.
I'd also like to mention that the transition from this highly defined red dot to the falling apart flakes initially was very bumpy for me for several days until it smoothed out.
It's hard. So that's the hard transition.
I'd space out, I'd fall asleep, I'd...
Right.
Get lost in thought, whatever. Get restless and start shifting postures.
So when we got through the dissolution-y phase, yeah, things would start to get more defined. Mm-hmm. And that's when, like, I start getting swirls, I start getting discs, I start getting cones of fine swirls, like fine lines, doing things with radial symmetry, swirling around. Well, I get sort of two different things. And then for a while I was going through a phase where I would get these long, like, tubes with thousands of little hairs or legs off of them.
Mm.
So, like, where I was getting, like, thousands of little fingers that were all sort of like in some sort of pattern, or regular things. I would get lots of little dots, lots of little mouths, lots of little eyes, lots of little spiders and insects and strange things. And this is in relatively low def, sort of the gray end of purple, you know, and these sort of vague snake-like patterns. I kept thinking about people who do ayahuasca, you know, and they get these sort of snake-like patterns of, like, flowing lines or patterns of stuff kind of swirling around. And I get a lot of that sort of stuff in that vague middle ground. Anybody?
Yeah. I don't know whether it's time for us to move on from that, but we basically explored two directions, as I recall. First of all, we went into colours. We were looking at the colour practice, and then we later moved on more into visions, didn't we, and imagery. That's my recollection.
Well, I was getting the images, and then I got into the colours, and then I got back into images with colours.
Mm.
Yeah,
I was training a different skill. Like,
you were training the fine attention on lots of little fine detail. Yeah, and so figuring out how to sync with things that are wider, out around the dark space, how to synchronize with the fine detail of a wider field of attention is very different from drilling down on a red dot, which is really the important point.
Yeah.
You know, how to let the mind be wider and see fine detail yet in something that's wider, you know, and to see it for these, like, sinkholes and these waterfalls and these strange voids and sort of, I don't know if you all get, I kept getting these, like, three-dimensional, like, cones that would, like, do all these things swirling around.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so at some point we started getting into the color practice, which sort of relates to the fact that there's a number of places you can go out from this, and we started to see a number of places you can go out even from the first thing you start with. So when starting from, I think most of us started to notice, like, initially we noticed the flame and then noticed the after image of the flame and the red dot and everything, but at least for myself, I started to notice, by the way, the whole table the thing was sitting on is glowing bright purple now in my visual field. And by the way, as Duncan pointed out, there's this iridescent blue sort of around the top part of right and around the candle. And by the way, the really dark red rug in my visual purple after field likes whitish green, right? And so you can actually start to take any of those as object, as the concentration improves, and do something cool with them. Like, you could take the blue iridescence and take that as object and take that out into interesting territory. Or you could take the broad sort of whitish green background because of the dark red rug, which is, you know, the complementary color to dark red, and you could take that as object and expand that out, you know, and then that would start taking us in different directions. We would start to notice there are these various avenues or axes of exploration you can go off from the initial place, and they are in some ways the same and in some ways very different.
So I think what we did there in terms of the Visuddhimagga framework was we used different kinds of casino. The red dot was the candle fire casino.
Yeah.
And the colors, focusing on the colors, would be color casinos.
Like
blue or white or.
Right.
Yeah.
Strangely, no green casino in the Visuddhimagga.
Although we both saw a lot of green.
Green, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And purple. There's no purple casino, and I get a crap ton of purple.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so, and then we started playing with getting different colors. So we started noticing that at some point you can start to take whatever's manifesting and turn it to different colors. So, like, you know, you could shift it into pink, or you could shift it into red, or you could shift it into blue, or shift it into green. And then some of us started getting way into, like, the fine nuances of color shifting and fascination with that, which was tremendous fun for a little while. Mm. And then that was more taking just the colors that were occurring in the field as object rather than really what image they were creating.
Yeah.
Mm. And then at least I started playing with now pulling that color shifting ability back in between ambers and peaches and magentas and pinks and purples and greens and deep greens and blue greens and sea greens and gray greens and all these remarkable color palette things, and pulling that back into the realm of the swirling images, and then seeing if I could do images in multiple colors and stuff, and bring up anyway. So
yeah. Oh, I had a really hard time with this. So I get to my lovely iridescent blue place after the red dot. But then, in order to manipulate colours, I had to find some colours. I don't know if it was the same for the two of you, but in my blue iridescent place, that wouldn't be where the colours were. Sometimes I'd have to kind of search around. They seem to be in a different place. Usually I'd have to sink down even further than I was already. Mm-hmm. And then what I'd generally find is a place where there would be colours that were sort of gradually ebbing in and passing away, a bit like a kind of fibre optic light, you know, those ones that sort of process through various colours.
Yep.
It would be like that. And that was the colour place for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was the same for you.
Yeah, the colours would, like you say, ebb and move around.
Yeah,
yeah, shift so between shades.
And that's the place to start with the colour manipulation. Right. So you would see these colours gradually pulsing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would be able to try to influence them.
And just, it requires a subtle bit of patience for those following along at home. So you intend for the colour to shift, and you just have to wait for it. If you try to force it like you would force the red dot to be in the centre, or force whatever, like, it doesn't work as well. But if you like just sort of gently intend for it and then wait to it to shift in that direction, again, one of these things where timing and synchrony and sort of mind phase or mindset and relationship to effort and attention and timing became really important.
Mm.
Yeah, so at this point, it was still this dark, not quite black background with colored dots on top for me. So it was grainy. It wasn't this sheet of color.
Mm-hmm.
So us talking about color might raise the wrong expectations here.
Sort of fragments.
Fragments and flakes and floating bits
Motes.
Of color. Motes. Often quite pale, this kind of washed out quality to them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Mine were starting to get pretty good by that point.
Took me longer. Obviously then related to ability to concentrate.
And probably having done this once before. Right?
Yeah.
So I've been up in this tent territory once before, so this is my second time through it, whereas the other two's first time.
I noticed for me the colours did brighten up and intensify a little bit during the time, but they were pretty washed out.
Yeah, that was when you said I shouldn't pay too much attention to the shape of things.
Just the colour.
Shape, it's not a dragon, not a unicorn.
Right.
Until I realized, okay, even the flakes have shapes, so forget about the flakes, it's just the colors. Yeah.
Yeah.
That took me about one day.
So then we started pulling it back to shapes.
Well, I just say as well about intending the colors to change. I mean, there was me sort of sitting there thinking, right, blue, 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 blue.
Yeah.
And that's not quite what was required, we worked out. I mean, I thought it was interesting. I think it was you, Florian, you described it as changing the object of concentration, rather than sort of just willing something verbally, or
it's more like that. And also in terms of the Visuddhimagga thing, you're actually changing the casino. It's no longer the casino. It's a color casino all of a sudden, and you have to maintain concentration across these concentration objects.
Right.
Yeah. So let's see here. Then we started getting into phases of like bluish purple with like either you were getting green primarily and I was getting sort of a reddish orange and you were getting sort of an orange.
And greenish.
Right, sort of washing across it. So you'd get these colors washing across like waves, welling out from the center, welling in from the sides, washing across in the background, doing various interesting things. And that was one of the things that stuck with us. We would all keep getting to that phase as we would go through these sequences throughout the whole retreat. This is one of the predictable places.
Yeah.
It
was a pretty easy phase to get into a lot of the time.
Well, once we got good
at it. Got there. again, I had quite a hard time making the transition in the beginning.
Right.
So,
The interesting thing about this is the things that now seem easy to us now were not necessarily so. So, like, what was funny is within a few days we were complaining, Oh, it's just sitting down in heavy bodily bliss, you know, and I was feeling so physically wonderful, but I wasn't really getting great images, you know, which is the sort of stuff that retreatants generally don't complain about, you know. But so we were A, a bit precocious, B, a bit spoiled, and C, a bit talented. So anyway, and also with intense beyond just mere bodily bliss and rapture and exquisite peace and all those fine shamanic qualities that happened as a natural result of concentration, but also interested in images and powers and visions and traveling out of body and more exotic things. So the jhanas were sort of byproducts, not that they weren't nice byproducts, but they were means to an end rather than the end in some ways.
Yeah.
You know,
but so important. And but I think, important, yeah. Definitely. I think Duncan's point about thinking, like
right.
this conscious relaxation of mm-hmm. of the body basically is really important, because when you're all seized up it doesn't work.
Right. Well, third jhana is a relaxed, open, deep, slow, like being underwater, you know, chilled out way of perceiving things.
Yeah. So
it's wider, it's yeah. more.
So posture wise I was sometimes sitting cross-legged on this easy chair, and sometimes really slumping back and almost reclining as far as that was possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a few days in, and I had been doing too little walking practice, actually, I noticed.
Because yeah, I also started doing more walking later.
Yeah.
My knees were happier for that, my energy level was happier for that. I would get pretty edgy by the end of the night.
Mm-hmm. But to get back to the purple-green,
yes.
purple-orange,
mm-hmm.
we were starting to talk about that, weren't we? So that was the next place or phase in which we started to find ourselves. And like we were saying, it's characterised by alternating bands of colours, two colours,
mm-hmm.
although the actual colours vary.
Right.
Or like these.
And very peaceful, usually, by this point.
Yeah.
Usually a lot of bodily bliss and cool rapture and equanimity and spaciousness, and for me at least.
And you noticed early on, Daniel, how the colours that you're seeing and the way they wash is related to the breath, to the
right.
respiration
yeah.
process.
So the waves would come in related to breath phase, which led me to some interesting things where I had a lot of dragon symbolism and dragons and dragon imagery come up during this retreat for me. So yeah, so I started noticing that the red would sort of wash in a specific way towards the end of the out-breath, and then if I focused more on my nose, it would wash a slightly different way. And so I started breathing out, and I actually got so that I could control such that the red wash would start, and I would breathe out, and it would look like to me like I was breathing out red fire just in a straight line that would smooth out the bluish-purple background in this nice way as the red fire would flow out in front of me. Fun.
And again, you just mentioned the swirls would synchronize with the breath. So mm-hmm. I tried that, tried breathing out like you suggested, and mm-hmm. it was fanning up like blowing on a fire. So
yes, yeah.
And then later you described the dragon imagery. So that was, again, amazing to see how close these experiences matched.
Mm. Speaking of fire, should we talk about fire?
Yeah. Staring at a flame all the time, so...
There was a lot of fire on this retreat.
It was a lot of fire.
It was all about the fire.
Until you wisely brought in some elemental balance towards the end.
Yeah, yeah. But
thanks to Duncan for his magical discerning.
But yeah, so we were spending most of our day staring at a candle flame. There was also
Stoking a fire.
Yeah, wood burner, wasn't there, in the room. The room was pretty warm, and there were roaring flames all day. And it got hot and dry in there.
Also led to a lot of fire imagery, so I had a lot of images of like logs burning. So when I started, within a few days, I was flashing onto photorealistic images of like logs burning or logs flaring or fires or like the fireplace or the fire is burning like white and purple in the fire, and seeing a lot of things like that. And at one point I started seeing the candle, although it looked a little different. I started seeing images of the candle like I was looking at it, except it was sort of more like it was made out of beeswax, a little darker, where our candles were white.
Mm.
These
are hyper-real images that suddenly,
definitely.
Spontaneously appear.
Right. Yeah, high def.
Linger for some time and sort of give an impression of animation in real time. So you'd see the flames burning, the embers glowing, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, any time anybody got up to change the fire, the sound of the fireplace would trigger one of those images for me. Yeah. And I'd suddenly find myself like staring into what seemed like a totally real, totally living fire.
Yeah, and then I had the dream of Ginger, the red-haired fire goddess. And then the next day we invoked the god and goddess of fire. And yeah.
We were really stoking it up.
Yes, we were. Yeah.
I mean.
Also, you had a vision of this bearded.
Red. Falconish.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so did you. Right?
Later on, yeah. So did I, yes.
So yeah, I mean, we were practicing Fire Casino, so we really went for it.
Put the Queen and King of Hearts. I'm sorry, of wands on the
bench with the
on the table. Candle. Yeah, so we had this whole sequence of cards we would put out each day. People would change around cards and put out cards related to what was going through with them. Whatever tarot card would be relevant for their practice phase or intent.
Because the casinos give access to specific powers.
Yes, and connect you to the element.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very elemental practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the powers for the fire casino are...
Seeing fires. Divine eye, divine ear. So we started to hear some things too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although we didn't hear as nearly as much on this one as we might have.
Mm.
Yeah. So as my mantra was shifting one time to things related to Ginger, the red-haired fire goddess, at one point I heard the voice with her saying, "My name is Fire." Like, so I was trying to search for the right name for her for the mantra. She clarified the confusion.
Mm. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I was happy for that. It made sense. Yeah.
I mean, it's probably worth saying at this point that this was typical of some of the sort of side effects we were getting in the first few days. So there was spontaneous imagery, like the imagery of the fire.
Right.
I would also get spontaneous imagery that would include sounds. that would include sensations. I remember there was one where suddenly I was washing my hands under water that was pouring down, and I could feel the water on my hands really, really vividly. And these would last a couple of seconds, 2 or 3 seconds, but be totally vivid, totally real.
Yeah. And then I had my first travel, and I can't remember how many days in, where all of a sudden I was across the room looking at the window through the side of the diagonal thing. I was over by you, looking around going, "Oh." And then I was like, "Oh, snap back." So first travel, off the couch.
Yeah.
And had another one where I actually became a white pillar inside, sort of on the side of the fireplace, with a black pillar next to me, just like in the High Priestess card, except I was the pillar. And then all of a sudden I was the stove, and the fire was burning where my belly would be, and I was just sitting there as the stove, and then I snapped back into my body. Anyway,
yeah.
And you had experiences, and I also had experience with a red gem. Like, I felt like all of a sudden there was a red gem in my solar plexus, and then I tried to move it around, and like all the chakra colors inverted to the other colors, and then the red gem moved back into that place, and then it was like, oh no, all the, if I'm doing a fire casino, all the chakras need to be red, so I just turned them all red.
Yeah.
I was playing around with postural stuff. You got into similar things, is that right?
Yeah, a bit later on. But a lot of this retreat for me seemed to be about discovering different types of imagery. Images of kinds that I never suspected could exist. So one of them that appeared very early on was an image of a sort of bearded, reddish god figure, which we took to be Vulcan, given the sort of fiery circumstances. And I think that was only first or second night in.
Yeah, second night maybe.
Yeah, I remember we finished at midnight, and we all shut our eyes, and we could all see strange things. Suddenly there was this other space inside that we'd somehow created. So, you know, we finished at midnight and we shut our eyes, and there were these things that were just sort of hanging there.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this face of a red bearded figure. And I noticed that if
you
I turn
Roman, is that right?
Yeah, Roman, mm-hmm. Roman rather than Greek, I think. Mm-hmm. So Vulcan. And then I noticed that if I turn my head to the left or the right, the image didn't move. The image didn't move with me. It sort of occupied a fixed space. straight ahead of me, which totally blew my nut at the time. Because yeah. it was as if when I shut my eyes, there was no longer a kind of internal space. There were two external spaces.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like my eyes are open onto the perceptual world, and that's an external space. And then mm-hmm. I shut my eyes, and there's this image mm-hmm. that also seemed to occupy a fixed position within space as well.
Yeah.
And that's completely unwilled, and it was there.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah. So that was quite a striking one.
And then we start getting into, at some point, the parallax. That reminded me of the parallax question, or was it, we called it pseudo-parallax?
Pseudo-parallax,
which is, so I started getting into images that would do a parallax-like thing when I moved my head, right? So I was getting into these sheets, like great sheets of purple that would zoom off towards a point. So from a lot of my practice started involving a dot, that these vortices of energy, or these lines of energy, or planes of lines of purple flux would converge to, or around, or shift around, or spin around. It's just sort of where it ended up going for me. And but started noticing the pseudo-parallax, as we called it, where if I was looking at the dot ahead of me and I would turn my head, the lines going to this image would act as if the dot was in a specific place in the room rather than just something in my head.
Mm.
So all the lines converging towards it, the planes, the sheets of violet or purple or blue or red or whatever they were at the time, whatever color I was playing with, would sort of change as if one end was anchored to my head and it would move with it, and the other end of the lines, you know, the sort of perspective lines, was anchored to the spot in the room that didn't move, creating a strange sense of like, wow, like, so yeah, sort of odd parallax like phenomena where, like, wait a second, what is that?
So like the mind really puts the image there and tracks mm-hmm. it and keeps it steady.
Yeah.
So yeah, should we get into more of the weird effects now, or should we continue with the sequence?
Let's carry on with the sequence.
Let's get the sequence out of the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, here the sequence gets complicated. So, like, the sequence gets complicated. So I don't know if we can all totally agree on exactly what the sequence is, but I think we can agree on most of the elements.
Mm-hmm.
So the elements out at this point are, one of them is the black and white, as I call it, mm-hmm. out of which you could get colors and you could play with the colors, and you could turn that into a solid sheet of white or a complex sheet of white, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so the black and white, as I call it, and it would sort of sometimes be sort of disorganized, or black and gray. Sorry, the white and gray really is white and more like what it was. Yeah, it was white and sort of grainy gray. And then there would be the low-res field of sort of pixelated TV snowy images, but you can get images out of it, and you could get fine-grained stuff, and you could get
some stuff
and some three-dimensionality to it, but not great 3D, right? It's not going to do full 3D, but a little 3D. And you'd get the low-res images. I could get low-res dragons. I could get low-res panthers. Mm. And you were getting rabbits. Is that right?
I was trying to.
Did you ever get rabbits?
Yeah, vague rabbits.
Vague rabbits. Yeah, so this was the low...
Yeah, I got these lotus ponds full of flowers. And
right.
The feet of the bodhisattva and things like that.
Yeah, so there was that. And then sometimes within that, we would see behind it, like through holes in it, or up at the top part of it, or like a layer beyond that or behind that that was like solid, not pixelated, but sort of with washed out colors, and gave a sense of depth behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we would get that behind that layer. And then there was the strange space out phase that would come after that, where like everything would be sort of just like you're looking at it, but you're not looking at it. You can see it, but you can't see it. Everything's like totally discombobulated, like the sense of looking but not looking. And then for me, at least, that would then come out. I could come out of that either to the purple with the orange washing through, or that would, I could come out of that to it would be like a dot of purple with increasing degrees of blue out to the periphery, out around that, but very smooth, right? Very smooth, but still fine grains, right? So there would be like this, almost like a, not like a, yeah, anyway, so but very fine-grained. And if you really tuned to it, the imagery would sometimes start and sometimes not. Like, particularly for you, you were having trouble. Mm. Like, sometimes you'd get to the smooth...
Yeah, but it'd be just field. Like, there's no movie on today. Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. So all the right. conditions would be yeah. there, but just, yeah. just so no image.
Isn't that funny that we'd be complaining when you've got, like, deep bodily bliss at that point and, like, yeah, stable, like, wide casino feeling, your whole field of vision, and, by the way, no good images.
Yeah. Where's my rubber?
Where is it? Right. So, where's my, yeah. So, you know, so here we are complaining, but we're also kind of spoiled, so it's kind of funny, yeah. like, most people would struggle to, like, I don't know, like... Anyway, it's just amazing how your perspective can change when you get into this stuff. So, yeah, bodily bliss, whatever. I'm so bored with it. I'm over it. So anyway, and then there was, for me, sometimes the purple thing with the washing thing through it would start to get these iridescences in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the iridescences would move up and move up. It sort of like took a third eye, so my eyes would sort of be looking up towards this mid-center of my field, and then that would get into what we started calling the molten gold.
Yes, this yeah. thread of molten liquid.
But defined and bright.
Very defined, very bright.
Yeah.
Like wet ink, gold ink, or something like that.
Yeah, but for me it would like even start sometimes like super saturate the color field, like when I look at those halogen lamps that are up there on the walls that are so bright, like they super saturate the color field, like... I would get that sense of the molten gold, but the molten gold I found very finicky. It could get very fine detail, but not pixelated. Like it could get these very incredibly complicated, shimmering, almost like oil slick-like patterns on it that would move and oscillate really fast.
Really fast.
But yeah. as soon as my attention would flag for even a little bit, the gold was gone. Like I found it. Mm. Like it was. Whereas the other things, like some of the purple cones and like the snakes and stuff, I could scratch my head, I could like, you know, go into my body and they'd still be there doing their thing, right?
Yeah,
I
mean,
like
yeah.
strangely bomb-proof almost, like yeah. past a certain point, but the gold I never got to be bomb-proof.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, there was also this thing with very deep depth perception and the body almost totally vanishing and the sense of
right.
floating.
It's
space.
The fourth phase, as we call it. Phase. Yeah. So we started calling this a fourth phase. You all want to say more?
Actually, I only got into that a few times, so you're probably the...
You got into that somehow?
No, I don't think so.
No. Okay, so the fourth phase. The fourth phase was something that I could get into moderately often, but not reliably. So, in particular, usually I would power up during the morning, you know, and lose a little momentum at breakfast, and then power up, you know, and then we'd lose a little at lunch, and we'd talk and have a great time talking about all kinds of awesome stuff. And... then in the evening is when my power would really come into its full thing, and usually by about 4 or 5 I would be at what I'd think of as full power, you know, and I could go through the sequence with control, with easy transitions, not space out on the transitions, as opposed to earlier in the day, it wouldn't be quite as easy, you know, you'd like sort of get lost, you'd lose the image, you'd get lost in the bliss, you'd kind of head would nod or whatever, you know, but like as I would get up towards evening, then I like really could like, and finally, you know, particularly by like day 7, 8, 9, you know, I could really start to go through the sequence with competence. And by, was it day 10 when I finally, day 10 or 11, I finally was like, okay, I've got it. Like, I think it was day 11.
Yeah.
It was only like 2 days ago where I was like, okay, I've got the sequence. I've got the control. I could go through and shift to all the things and shift back and forth and shift up from the third phase, which has these various options in it, but without the high D, the high 3D, and without the high def images, and then go into the fourth phase. And in the fourth phase was characterized by a much higher degree of three-dimensionality, mm. B, a much greater preponderance of creatures that seemed alive. They seemed to be moving on their own with their own sense of intelligence, their own sense of cognition, like the dragons were moving on their own. They seemed to be controlling themselves. I got one good image of some sort of deity-like figure in a chair, but it kept morphing into all these things. I was disappointed I didn't get more of those. I got one brilliant green cross, which, as Florian pointed out, might have had something to do with my asking for a green Tara visitation following Florian's lead.
Mm-hmm.
And getting, because you said her name means cross.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Green cross.
Yeah, green cross. Anyway, so I got this brilliant green cross and high definition, 3D, very three-dimensional. And I would get these sort of swirling things that look like something off of Nova where they're describing black holes. you know, where you get all the flux lines coming down to a point, and then like where they describe like wormholes, like where a white hole and a black hole come together. Like I got a lot of those images swirling, and then like they would get vast and they would get luminous, they would get very, very clear and happening on their own, and then I would get fruitions off of those things. I got one sequence. It was like this panther, and this it sort of morphed into this like sort of mix of like a tiger and a warthog, and that sort of morphed into this sort of wolf-like thing, and then that morphed into this old wizard guy, and then that morphed into me, and then I got a no self-door fruition off of collapsing into the image of myself. But I also managed to get fruitions off of a number of things. I got it off the molten gold twice, once when it shuddered really fast, and once when it spun around to the side in a classic sort of no self-suffering toroid rotation thing. But reproducibly getting up to the high 3D stuff was tricky, like, you know.
A few more days.
I kept another week on retreat, and oh my God, we'd be friggin' nailing this stuff. Imagine if we had another week.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
The end of part one.